Ladies, gentlemen, porgs, welcome back to the Utini Cast. I'm one of your hosts, Adam Kautzer, and with me is...
Spencer Howard.
Your other host, and we've been gone for a little bit, but as we've talked about before in the past, the reason why we do this is not out of money. It's all out of the love and passion for Star Wars. So if things get in the way, we try our best to make sure that it happens. But if it doesn't happen, we'd rather have a great podcast than an on-time podcast. So the past couple weeks, you haven't seen a new Teeny Cast because me and Spencer, we've got other endeavors going on. So thank you for tuning back in. Definitely. But just so that you know, we are going to be back on a schedule. We're not, since we're covering Rebels right now, since the season has started, we're going to continue on with that. And what we're going to go ahead and do is we're going to cover the next two episodes. We're not going to try to squeeze everything in one episode. We're just going to continue on our path because you guys deserve that. We love you guys as much as we love Star Wars. Well, maybe not as much as I love Star Wars, because that might be a little crazy, loving fans that I've never seen before. But it's all to say, we're sorry we missed you as much as you missed us, probably, and we're going to get right back into it. So with that...
Yeah, I'll follow my sword, too, my lightsaber, and say this. A lot of last week was my fault, and that's my apologies. But I'm here, and I promise it will be more consistent on my end. And I appreciate y'all's patience and Adam's patience as well. You started off not even calling me out. You're so kind. But I'm here and I'm ready to go.
Absolutely. That's how we do here. This is how the Utini Cast works. We're inclusive. We don't exclude people unless you're gamer bros. I mean, you know, we don't want the negativity there. But if you're a reformed gamer bro, I mean, you're more than welcome. I mean, heck, you're even welcome to listen if you're a gamer bro and hate listen to me talk about your culture. But with that, we're going to go ahead and get into the comm leak, because there's a couple of interesting things that we want to talk about. But I mean, you know, as you guys all know, it's ramping up to The Last Jedi. So we're probably not going to see major things come out until post Last Jedi. But with that, let's go ahead and get into the comm leak.
Use the comm leak. Oh, my. I forgot. I turned it off.
So, Spencer, how has your life in Star Wars been since we last spoke?
Well, I've got really, it's been pretty good, consistent. I, on your recommendation, got the book, which I can't believe just left my mind's name, but I got Audible, like we talked about. Mm-hmm. And I got From a Certain Point of View. I got the book, the audiobook, with all the different voice talent behind each of those short stories. And I just finished it a couple of days ago. I've been listening to it on my drive into town and back every day. And man, I thoroughly enjoyed it. It's a lot of fun. It's a little... it's one of those things where, do I really need to know the story of the monster that's in the compactor on the Death Star? Not really, but God, did I enjoy knowing the story of the monster in the track compactor. So I finished that just a couple days ago, and just I loved it. And that's been a big part of sort of my new Star Wars intake in the last couple of weeks outside of Rebels. But man, that was a great recommendation on your part, and I'm going to use it. I'm keeping Audible, and I'm going to just get the first Battlefront book on my next free book. Mm-hmm. It's sort of kind of the books I'm not reading regularly or in a big way. I'm going to try to get those in on my commute. So great recommendation on your part, but that's my big Star Wars stuff in the last few weeks.
Okay, great. No, thank you. I'm glad that it was a good recommendation. I'm actually about halfway through it, and I really am enjoying it. It's not, what I love is that it's not, even though you're right, it's like, do I need these little gaps filled in? No. But if they're going to do it, I want them to do it with a lot of passion. And I love that each and every single one of these stories that I'm listening to, I'm not going to say I'm reading them because I'm not, that's right. Cheating. But every single story that I've listened to so far, there's a passion behind it. Not only with the voice talent, but the storytelling itself, which I found really interesting.
No, I agree. I mean, even like the there's just, it's a short, one of the shorter ones, but the Paul Dini story, the Boba Fett story read, mm-hmm, by John Hamm, which we talked about on the show a few weeks ago, kind of curious to see how that would turn out. I really loved Paul Dini's. It just felt like such the inside of the mind of a criminal, and it's very short and sweet. I think John Hamm did a good job. Still would have preferred even just getting the actor who played Jango Fett to do it would have been, to me, an easy and smart move. But I thought John Hamm did a good job. But the storytelling of such a small little moment of Boba Fett standing around in a scene that's only included in the special editions, which I guess is now the only editions we have legally. I don't know. It's just a great, like you said, drive and passion to tell fun little moments in the Star Wars canon. It's just a blast. That's how I would really describe it. It was just such a little blast.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then what it retroactively made me do is I keep on thinking about what we had our discussion about, which was making an anthology series TV series. And this has just convinced me that that would be the right move to make half hour or hour long mini films where you can have guest directors come in, guest writers, guest actors, and do a Star Wars one off. Like it just works. Like to me, like the stories, like every single one of them is, I may not, you know, there are some that are better than others, but by and far and large, I really like what is being told and how they're telling it. So it is really super interesting. I will report back a little bit more after, like, we'll probably have a full on wrap up of that book once I finish it up. You mentioned, are you going to go ahead and the next book you're taking is Inferno Squad?
The first Battlefront.
Oh, okay.
So because I've skipped it, because I'm not a huge military reader, which seems weird for such a lover of Star Wars. Mm-hmm. But I've heard so much, and I read like the opening chapter, like at the back of a free preview, like chapter or two, and it's very like military squads, military based, and like I don't read Tom Clancy, that's not my kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I felt like this would be an easy way to sort of spend the commute, because from what I've heard about it, it's much more of that type of book, and I'm hoping to be happily surprised, or at least be able to take in the story in a way that's not as taxing as taking up my other precious reading time, because I got to drive anyway, so might as well listen to some Star Wars.
Exactly. Like that's the way I'm doing it. I'm mixed between podcasts and Star Wars.
So that's my new first world struggle, is how do I keep up with my podcast and an audiobook?
I do drive home. Like I separate them. I do.
Makes sense.
In the morning, I do. Okay, so like this is so weird, random, off topic of Star Wars, but on topic. So in the morning, I do my podcasts. So like Slash Film Daily, Pure Cinema Pod, you know, Shockwaves, whatever I'm going to go ahead and listen to. On my way home, I listen to usually an audiobook because that helps me relax, because where I'm getting information in the morning and kind of prepping my brain to start to take in things, kind of like coffee for my mind. That's what my podcasts do for me. What my, like coming home with the audiobooks, it's typically like, you know, I hate to use the word trash fiction, but it's pulpy trash fiction, and that helps me relax. So going back and forth, like the reason why I'm kind of juggling both is because I'm going through the Bond books and the audiobooks. Like I'm still going through them. I think we had a conversation a long time ago about that, but because Audible allows you to do one download a month, I've taken books once a month, and so like I have a combination of Bond, Star Wars stuff that's in my Audible account that I just randomly, whatever I feel the need to listen to, I'll switch between Star Wars and James Bond, and it's kind of like a nice way to relax.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's how I divide my time. But again, we will have a full-on conversation about this, guys, after we've both have finished this very interesting quote-unquote book. So the next item that we kind of wanted to talk about was so let's just get this up front. You know, we've seen the whole I've seen the headlines, the speculation, you know, Adam Driver talking to GQ, Daisy Ridley talking to other various news outlets, and they're talking about Rey's parentage and, like, you know, did it slip out? Did Adam Driver do this? We're not going to cover it. Sorry, guys. We just don't, because Spencer and I kind of like, I take a little bit more forward thinking about it, and I'm okay with certain things. Like I'll toe the line, you know, as Charlie Murphy used to say, I'm a habitual line crosser. Like I toe the line, but Spencer is taking that whole, you know, and I'll let him speak to a little bit more about it, the no spoilers, you know, pretty seriously, but I mean, with justified reasons. He wants to enjoy the film. So we're just not going to talk about it, because how can we talk about something non-spoilery that is spoilery?
Yeah, I think for me, like, there's two things I don't want to know at all, right? There's mm-hmm. just specifically two things. I don't want to know whose Ray's parents are until the story tells me who Ray's parents are, if it matters, right?
Yeah.
Unless someone comes out and goes, it actually doesn't matter, it's just going to be two farmers on some place. Then I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, sure, tell me whatever you need to tell me. But if it's something important, I don't want to know in advance of the film. And the other thing for me that I don't want to know is the nature of Luke's mental state right now. Like the details. We know he's off on his own, and we have that sort of semi insight into his state, but we don't know if he is there. Like, you see all these articles, all the clickbaity. Did Mark Hamill say that Luke's gone to the dark side, or did Mark Hamill say don't worry about the dark side? I don't care. I don't click on any of it. Those are the two things. I just want to know what's up with Luke, because the story tells me. I want to know who her parents are, if it matters, because the story tells me. So I've been pretty diligent. I almost mm-hmm. said divergent.
diligent.
And not reading anything that hints at either one of those. So the last big article I've read, and probably will read before the film, I bought Empire's magazine, the Last Jedi magazine. And that's probably the last Star Wars big article I read before I see the film in December. So I just, for whatever reason, I want those two. Everything else, if we find out they do eat porgs in the movie and they tell me that in advance, I won't be upset. Upset for the porgs, but not upset because I know. I just don't want to know the parents, and I don't want to know about Luke. I just want to walk in and experience it fresh.
I'm in 100% on board with you on this. Like, I'm enjoying the ride to The Last Jedi. I mean, which is really odd, because it's like I blinked my eyes and literally it's been 2 years, and we're mm-hmm. getting this sequel. I mean, we're literally what, less than a month and a couple of days until we can see the movie.
That's so crazy.
I know, right? And for me, it kind of goes to this whole thing of, like, I'm not going to read reviews. I don't care. Mm-hmm. I'll probably end up going into my Twitter and putting in keywords to mute what everybody is saying, because we all know, oh, so many writers, bloggers that are going to be oh so twee and cute about their conversations about how they saw The Last Jedi, even if it's a couple of days in advance. I don't want to see it. I don't want to hear it. Allow us, like, I wish there was a way to just allow people to stay in a vacuum and just experience it, like circa 1983 with Return of the Jedi, or circa 1980 with Empire Strikes Back. I know that it's not realistic, but I can make a bubble as much as I can possibly do to stop me from knowing too much about the
movie. Absolutely.
So with that, guys, that's why we're not going to cover the clickbaity stuff, though we are going to talk about something right now that is supremely interesting to both me and Spencer, because of our kind of film production background and just the way that we love behind the scenes discussions. So it's the rumor is going around that Ron Howard has basically completely reshot Solo, a Star Wars story. And this is not surprising, but it's still fascinating. What's fascinating to me is I don't think it's spite, but the lengths at which Lucasfilm went to, and I'm not going to call out Kathleen Kennedy, because I think that would be unfair to call out a single person. But Lucasfilm, the lengths that like Lucasfilm is going to ensure that Lord and Miller's names do not show up on the directors on the directed by credit. So much so that for double the cost, they're getting one movie directed by three directors that will only be credited to one director.
It's crazy. It's one of those things where I can hear the thoughts, the boardroom meetings about legacy.
Yeah.
And what's the future generations when they won't have, you know, like Ezra, my son, when he grows up, he'll not have much of a, it'll be one of those rumor things he hears about and thinks about vaguely if he's into Star Wars. You know, it won't be a, when he sees Solo, he'll think Ron Howard movie because that's what the legacy will be. And it feels like a legacy move. Let's make the legacy of this film a single director, no matter what. So it's nice and clean and simple for future generations so that we, when you wash out our history, we're the victors. So we're going to write our history right now in the present. It's very weird. It's very bizarre. There's all these rules and regulations in the Directors Guild about crediting, and to go so far and spend so much to make sure your new director is the director of credit. It's an impressively big show. It's like they pulled down their pants and are showing off what they got. It's very intense and surprising and ballsy, for lack of a better word.
Oh yeah. Like, I mean, literally, I mean, so I've even heard a rumor that by production's end, this movie is going to be one of the most expensive movies of all time.
Oh, good Lord.
For like, because they literally filmed it twice. They paid. I mean, this is what's shocking to me. They paid actors that aren't even showing up in the movie. Michael, like one of my favorite actors, Kenneth Michael Williams, was in the movie and was replaced by Paul Bettany.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is not coming. And that is shocking to me that they paid him. I mean, he got paid.
Mm-hmm.
And he got paid his full salary. But he's not even in the movie. You paid another A-list actor because they're both on the A-list. I mean, they're supporting actors, but they're still on the A-list. They get A-list money to be in the film and one to not be in the film for the same role. That is shocking to me. Like, the fact that it almost reeks of, I mean, it really does. It's, we've seen this before, but it happened 35 years ago. And I hope to God, I can hope that I can still, like, you know, 74-year-old Adam will finally see the light of day of what, like the Richard Donner cut of Star Wars, Superman 2 that was taken away from him and Richard Lester was brought in. I hope it's not that mess. But what I do hope is that eventually I get to unpack everything that happened from both sides. Like, both sides give a perspective, and I hope it's not an Alien 3 thing where literally there's nothing left and there's nothing that we can make out of this, because the more I hear about this stuff, like the 80%, like they said it's in excess of 80%, because DGA rules require for a director to get sole credit, he or she must have directed 80% of a film. So what Lucasfilm did was spent all of the money, physical production again, to film again. So that even makes me think, even now, we're looking at this getting pushed to next December. I can almost guarantee it.
My only thought, see, I wish it would, because I've been on the record saying I wish it would start, you and I both, Star Wars is to be our Christmas movies from now on. But here's the thing that I will say in sort of a weird, like, devil's advocate position. Okay, in about less than 2 weeks, Justice League comes out, and by all accounts, Joss Whedon has done a similarly significant amount of shooting on this movie.
Yeah.
And it baffles me that this movie's coming out on the same release date. And so to me, Hollywood can pull some stuff out when they want to. So as much as I want them to do December, this Justice League non-move makes me feel like they could still have it at the same release date. So I'm not as convinced, only because in my mind I went, once Justice League moves, I'll point at that as the proof positive that Han Solo will move, or Solo will move. And now it hasn't. It's here in less than 14 days. And so I'm not as sure of myself, although I still just as strongly want it to move to December.
No, I can see that. I can definitely see it. And just, I mean, and rumors are about that Justice League budget is so quiet, but it is astronomical because everybody is working overtime to try to make that film. I mean, they've completed it. I mean, press have seen it. I mean, we just don't know. We don't know the end result of it, but yeah, I mean, it's all to say it's really fascinating that
it is
that this movie went down the way that it did. Like it proves to me that, like, at this point, director doesn't matter, actor doesn't matter, producer doesn't matter, the IP matters. We're in the age of the IP.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't matter who directs Han Solo. What matters is Han Solo.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yep. So I'm still very interested to see, because we've not heard anything about a trailer. Nothing. So I'm still interested in seeing if they're going to attach a trailer to Star Wars, or are they going to go ahead and bet all their chips on Infinity War and put Infinity War on front of it. And that will actually, for me, that's kind of more of like an indication of things. Though I full well expect, like, you know, just as a weird adjacent, I'm wondering what you think of this. I wonder if Marvel decides to release the Infinity War trailer the week that Justice League premieres.
That'd be pretty intense. They like to troll each other, yes. Disney / Marvel / Lucasfilm and Warner Brothers. I could see it. I guess the latest I could see us getting a solo trailer is the Super Bowl, but even that just seems incredibly too late. And if it's that late, you can tell then for sure they're just pushing there as much as they can to get something done. I would love it if all of a sudden next week the internet explodes and it's not because of Justice League, but it's because of Solo. That'd be pretty amazing.
Yeah, exactly. Because, I mean, at this point, like, it's like we should have already gotten a trailer. Like, to be honest, like, the way that the timeline works with how Lucasfilm releases things, that's what worries me. Is more than any. It's not even really a worry. It's just one of those things where it's like, yeah, you know what? A year out. Like last May, they should have had a trailer. Of course, we know why they didn't have a trailer, because they reshot everything. But now at this point, he's at a certain point halfway through that reproduction, that's what I'm going to be calling that, the reproduction of Star Wars or Solo. They should have enough footage to put some stuff together. And of course, the special effects are already in line, and those set pieces are probably not changing.
Yeah.
So again, it's one of those things where I'm like, this is, but I know that they've been full force with The Last Jedi. So, but we shall see. We should definitely see. It's all to say it's very, it's intriguing, because I kind of want to know what Ron Howard's Star Wars movie is, but more than anything, I keep on lamenting the loss of Lord and Miller's, like, Star Wars movie. I really do. Even if it's a comedy, even if it was an outright comedy, like, I still lament that loss, because that unique vision is gone, and now we know it's going to be very cookie cutter. But I shouldn't say too much, because we might get blackballed, like certain other news agencies that are much, much bigger than us when you talk about the mouse.
Right. No kidding.
So. With that, did you have any more news pieces that you wanted to approach?
No, I think I'm good. I think the biggest news, the biggest other news I haven't mentioned, is my first payment for my Princess Leia Hot Toys with the Hoth costume has gone through. So I'm definitely getting it. I've committed.
Yes. Mine actually went, I think it was in, it was like, I think it was Halloween Day it went.
Gotcha. Yeah.
So. So by the time like, you know, by the time the new year rolls around, I should have my Darth Vader.
So cool. So I think they're saying like February, March for mine. I'm excited.
Yeah. Well, yours is because it's not been released yet, right?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Mine's already in release. It's just, I'm, you know, I'm just awaiting. I'm just finishing the payments.
You're being responsible is what you're doing.
I don't know how responsible I am when I'm buying a frickin' Darth Vader that costs me an arm and a leg. Just don't tell my girlfriend, please.
No, it's, your secret is safe with me.
Is it safe? Is it hidden? So with that, guys, we're going to go ahead and get into the main feature.
Hello, what have we here?
So, Spencer, in the name of the Rebellion Parts 1 and 2, high-level thoughts. What did you think of those, the return of Saw Gerrera?
I enjoyed them for sure. I don't have any sort of big negative feelings on it. It's a definite improvement from the premiere. Mm-hmm. And I felt like, oh, okay, I see you, Rebels. You're taking different little strands, just like we sort of talked about last time. I think both hoped that the Mandalore stuff, we're just getting it done and putting it behind us. This felt like the same step in the right direction of kind of putting a bow on a few things and moving forward. And it felt like, but now we're moving in a direction I'd rather be going in than the Mandalore stuff. Mm-hmm. And so, overall positive. And it felt like it was confirming more of our feelings about, okay, we're going to tie some stuff up and then jump into a narrative to finish out the show. And so I was happier than the premiere. I did not love it. Still not quite on the rhythm I'm waiting for with Rebels with these next two, but happy. What about you, man?
The same way. There are certain things that I really did like about it, and it's, like you said, it is a course correction, but there were a few items that I don't like about, and it's storytelling. It has nothing to do with characters. Like, I felt a sigh of relief that we were getting our characters back together.
Yes.
Now, of course, they separated at certain points, but it wasn't like this whole thing of, like, separating them for long term. It was like, it was a part of the story.
It felt like more, not traditional, but just what we're used to with Rebels. Yeah, they're together, but they split up and get back together. It wasn't like, where's Hera? She's a hologram. You know, it was sort of typical. The band breaks up and comes back together, and that's how their adventures go sometime. And I like that it started to feel more like the Rebels that I have loved for so long, and not so much like we were talking about an offshoot of the Clone Wars.
Yes. No, it absolutely did. And I think part of this is how you do integration of Clone Wars characters into a story. Which is, I feel like they've always, like, I was going to ask you how you felt about them bringing back Saw Gerrera.
Yeah, he's, you know, I like him in the Clone Wars. I watched all of his episodes right before Rogue One last year, so it's a little fresh, you know, more fresh than if I watched it just a few years ago. Mm-hmm. And I like their sort of tying together his transformation from who we knew in the Clone Wars to who we've seen in Rogue One, who we basically, and I assume on this podcast people have seen the film, so I'm not too worried about spoilers, but who we also see come to his end in the Rogue One. So I feel like it's a nice stepping stone between where he started, where we saw him last season, and then right before he is who we meet in Rogue One. And so I like that it's a step in that direction, but I also, more than anything, what was so great is he adds to our Rebels character's conflict. It's not just that he's existing and the Rebels walk into his life. Ezra is struggling with what to do about his home planet of Lothal, and the Rebellion stuck in sort of a bureaucratic standstill of what to do. And Saw Gerrera is saying, burn it all down, man, and save your people. And that's a struggle for Ezra. It's always been that light and dark philosophical argument. And Gerrera is sort of that dark, the red devil on his left shoulder, while sort of Kanan or maybe even Hera is like the white angel on the right shoulder. And I think it's interesting because it adds more to our characters, and it doesn't just play any sort of fan or maybe even creator service might be the right way to label it with Filoni and crew. So I like what he adds to the characters for sure.
Yes. And as I admit, like, as I kind of like, kind of said before, like, I feel like this is the way that you introduce legacy characters, or he's not really a legacy character, but like that term of legacy, like, you know, a previous character from a previous film or property. I definitely like how they are truly doing gap fills with his character so that you could actually track him from Clone Wars to Rebels and then finally to Rogue One, which is like what I like. I like the fact that Rebels is I was already saying that I didn't like that it's become this whole thing of like unfinished business in Clone Wars. But what I do like is how it's adjacently attaching itself to Rogue One and moving itself towards that timeline to kind of merge and be like a almost like an intersection of live action and animation. So I really like that, and I like how they're using a couple of key characters, Saw Gerrera and Mon Mothma. God, I cannot say that name. Too many M's. As the channels at which that they're finding the crossroads, and giving characters that didn't have much time in Rogue One a lot more time to breathe, so they become true characters and not just a cog in the piece. Like Saw Gerrera feels more like I just recently rewatched Rogue One to test out a new sound system I had, and what I realized was that he felt like more of a character because of the baggage that I brought in from Rebels. And Mon Mothma, the same thing. She feels like a character to me that I know, and this is just a piece of a story that she's a part of.
No, absolutely, man. Like, I totally agree. And I've always liked Mon Mothma in theory, but I'm so glad that I'm getting more to hang my hat on with that feeling. Yes. Saw is interesting. He's actually someone, when he was announced as being in Rogue One, he's someone I vaguely recalled. He wasn't someone who made a big impression the first go around on the Clone Wars. Mm-hmm. So at this point, in the end, it's the sort of story building I love about Star Wars, that it builds through many different mediums and time periods the life of a person, and it explores the life of a person. And I think they're doing that with Saw. So while I didn't originally really glom onto the character, I appreciate that life, the lifeline of Saw that we're experiencing. So yeah, I'm with you on both and enjoying them. I think that. If they're going to do it, like you said, this is the way. And I think it sort of honestly highlights the deficiencies in the premiere. But at the same time, I don't have any new hate for the premiere or anything like that. It's just, I'm very happy that I enjoyed these characters in this way.
No, you're right. It is a good course correction, at least for me. I like how certain things come into this universe and how they integrate them, and it doesn't feel like they're adding them in as a late in the game. It doesn't feel jerry-rigged to make a point, which is the U-wings. I love that design for that ship, and I love the fact that they've. And we'll get into this in later episodes, but I like how they've integrated the U-Wing into the Star Wars Rebels universe.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's nice to have something. So a problem that we've had in the past with the show, and sort of in talking in our other podcast as well, is that sometimes it can start to make the galaxy far, far away feel like a state far, far away.
Yes.
Everything's pretty tight together, and the U-Wing not being some prominent ship. Like, if the U-Wing in this show were actually an X-Wing, honestly, it would feel too tight. It would feel too close. And I like that it's something that it's the Rebels ship in its way, you know, it's the standby. And I like that the X-Wing isn't the thing that we're seeing all the time. So to me, it helps make, even when we're hanging out at Yavin 4 or some other place that is familiar, it makes it the world feel bigger and the galaxy feel bigger, that it's not something that we've seen a billion times before. So I'm with you, but for that reason, just because it makes me feel like it's expanding the universe instead of condensing it down.
Yes, instead of making it about one family like the Corleones, Skywalkers. Yes. I mean, it's like, come on, guys, there's more than just the Skywalkers out there, and I want to see more than the Skywalkers. Okay, so one thing that I was annoyed with, that is, I know this is going to be a thing until the end, is reveal the Death Star, call it what it is. Like, do something to indicate and not make it so, to me, it felt like when we're in the ship and Saw is looking for the information on this new weapon, we all know what it is. It's the Death Star. Why doesn't he just say it? It's more annoying to me that he's not, like, we're not getting any some strong indication of what it is. It's like they're playing around it, which, to be honest, I really don't understand.
Yeah, the only thing, and this is what I'm having a hard time with, because I don't think I have an actual clear answer on this, is when did they label it that? You know what I mean? It's like everyone seems to know there's a super weapon, but no one seems to know it's a circular base, or spherical base, I should say. I don't think, it seems like they went off to the ship and they didn't know what they would find, and they found a cargo ship. And so they thought they were going to find the weapon. They found a cargo ship. But it seems like, it just seems so, I feel like they're being purposely vague, because at some point there's going to be a book or a Forces of Destiny or some little thing that says this is the moment they named it. And that's why we're not getting that. And that's why some of this stuff feels oddly vague. And I don't like, it's like when your friend posts on Facebook, just having a rough time, guys. And you're like, what? What's happening? What are you? And that's what it feels like to me, is to go and like the Empire's done something really bad, guys. And you're like, what have they done? like, but we all kind of know what they did. But what have they done? And like, can you say what they did? And it just feels oddly vague. And I don't like that. But I feel like they're waiting for some little thing to go, like, this is where they named it the Death Star.
Yes. No. I feel the same way. It's like, I don't need any kind of content that says, this is how they named the Death Star.
Right.
I just need it to be something integrated into the system, like into the show. Like, what I feel like, one of the things that I don't know if I've ever talked about with Star Wars Rebels is how it, like, what I love about it is that it feels of a piece of the original trilogy, where there's not a lot of, okay, let's explain this to a T so that everything that is magical about this gets destroyed. I like that there's mystery. I like that I have, like, that kind of storytelling that Lucas started with the first three, where there's purposeful gaps, is still alive and well in Star Wars Rebels, but it feels like sometimes they take the wrong turn with it, like with the Death Star. It's like, I don't even care what you call it, but give me an image, give me something, give me an indication. Don't be purposely vague, because we all know what you're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a minor gripe, but at the same time, if this is a tapestry of storytelling, then we need a little bit more consistency with this kind of stuff.
Yeah, no, I agree. And to me, it's sort of like, let's just in episode 7 or 8 go, they just start calling it that, and we never, like, no one questions why they're calling it. Let's just, like, at some point they've named it, and so we're just there. Let's just do it. Let's just go all in on the Death Star. And let's just move past it and just do it. So I do feel at some point in this series or in this final season, we're going to get X-Wings and we're going to get a Death Star statement of some sort.
I would concur with that. I definitely would concur with that. So it is a step in the right direction. I think we both agree on that, correct?
Yes. Okay. Yes.
Absolutely. I will say this much. Like one of my favorite things was something that they actually ruined on the preview for the next after you watching the Heroes of Mandalore, they always do like that clip. And I really disliked the fact that they did the whole confrontation between Saw and Mon Mothma, because I feel like that's a character moment that should be fully integrated into the story rather than just a clip, like literally clip bait.
Yeah, no, I agree. I completely agree. I honestly, one thing I would say is I wish for a little more background, not exposition, but through their dialogue, you can tell they've bristled a few times before. And I kind of would love to have Mon Mothma and Saw Gerrera in a room together debating a little bit. Let's get one of those classic Game of Thrones political walk and talks from the earlier seasons, but with Mon Mothma and Saw Gerrera, and a lot less, you know, murder and stuff.
You know what I just thought about? Like, I had this flash, because I know you love this show. I just had a flash of something that I think Spencer would love, which is West Wing on the Death Star.
Oh my God, dude. You just, like, I have the just nerd excitement just ran through my whole body. That sounds so good. And, like, I just, so there's been all these rumors about what Filoni's going to do next.
Yeah.
Everyone's got their own opinion, but now I don't care what they say. This is what I want him to do next.
Wouldn't that be great, though? But I don't know why, but you have to cast Bradley Whitford as, like, the main character. Like,
oh, he'd be the perfect Imperial guy.
Yeah.
He'd be great.
Yep. The Admiral. Like, an Admiral. Like, I don't care if he's Mahdi or whoever you want to recast him as. And then you make his rival Bob Odenkirk.
Oh, man. So here's the thing I like, though, but they're rivals, but they're also both afraid of Vader's. And the Death Star's so big, they're constantly trying to avoid him. So you never even have to show Vader, because they just go to the other side of the planet and hide from him. And that's like the one time they bond is when they are hiding from Vader.
And that's why we have the walk and talk, because they're constantly evading Vader.
Oh, my God. It's Disney, call us. Call us. Seriously. We're here for you.
Seriously, it would not cost you anything. It would, like, the sets could be just like one long continuous hall, and you just have them walking. It could be 20 minutes long. Oh my gosh. And just having them trade barbs back, like, that would just be amazing. Like, I'm on a big Bob Odenkirk kick, because I just recently watched all the seasons of Better Call Saul.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just, as much as I liked him before, I'm just kind of in love with the dude now, just because of how just, oh, if you guys not seen that and you guys want a good crime show or like a crime-ish drama, I cannot recommend that enough. I know you're probably not going to like me saying this, but I'm even going to go on a limb and say it may be better than Breaking Bad at the end.
I've only seen season one of Better Call Saul at this point, but I will say it was like perfect. And that's just one season. And I've heard nothing but better things about season two. I'm now you've got me. I parse these things out, but now I'm like, well, maybe it's time to go ahead and jump on the season two train.
Oh yeah. Michael McKean, amazing. That's all I'll say. That's actually something, a discussion for Film Dispenser Prime, not the Utini cast, but yeah, like it's like going back to Rebels. Actually, I have a theory. Like, I'd like them to go really dark, and I'd like them to have Mon Mothma own the fact that she's the one that commits to having Cassian kill Saw Gerrera. Like,
yeah.
I feel like that is the way that you should go. If you're going with this rivalry, and it's weird and interesting to me that I don't know if you've noticed this. Have you noticed that these last two episodes, there seems to be like this darkness that's heading into this like series?
Yes, I think we're quickly approaching the moment when parents are going to have to start talking to their kids about serious stuff happening. And I am, for the first time ever, a little nervous about some of our cast. The more and more I watch, the more I go, and without getting into plot details, the more I just feel like there's some doom coming, and I'm a little nervous about it.
Absolutely. We've not talked about the episodes, and the episodes do exist out there, but there is one specific moment that I just shook my head and I went, yeah, they're going to probably kill this person off. And I'm not really happy about that. And I'm not really prepared for that.
Yep. And I think we're in the same exact place with that one.
Yes. I think that you know exactly what I was talking about, because it's something that's been, it's one of those things where I go, yeah, if Filoni is, and the interesting thing is, have you noticed that Filoni's name has come up as a writer a lot more this season?
Mm-hmm.
Which is interesting to me. But it also kind of like, it feels like the same way where Clone Wars headed, where it was light and fuzzy, and then it slowly but surely got darker and darker. And I feel like, yeah, we're headed into some bad road, guys, but it's going to be good bad road. It's going to be like that thrilling, like, you know, at the end of Rogue One, you're on a high, even though all of your favorite characters just died. Spoiler for a movie that you guys should have already seen. So, any final closing thoughts?
No, I just, course correction is the key word here. It feels like it's tightening up, getting the band back together. And because we can see the future, and also we're a little behind, I think that we were right in that feeling. So I think this was a good transition, and the show, I think, utilizes that momentum. So I'm very happy with the episodes. I wouldn't say I loved them, but I liked them more than the premiere, and the direction the show was turning, especially with the start of the great debate within Ezra's soul about how to treat Lothal beginning was the most interesting thing for me. And I liked it very much so.
Absolutely. And I can kind of reiterate your sentiments, and I'll add this much. I'm loving that they're humanizing or alienizing, whatever you want to call it, on Mothma. She's quite quickly has become one of my favorite characters on the show, just because of the time that we're spending with her, and showing a leader that doesn't have all the answers.
Yeah.
And that's just supremely interesting to me more than anything else, from these two episodes. And then, again, the course correction is great. And I think that, it's going to get better. So with that, guys, we will be back next week. Actually, we're going to be playing some catch up. We're going to actually talk about the next two episodes, The Occupation and Flight of the Defender, which means that we're bringing Admiral Thrawn back. And will he have some kind of actionable action, or will he just sit there by the sideline and go, very interesting?
Well, he holds his hands behind his back. Not that I've seen it or anything.
Yeah, not like we've ever seen it or anything. Or, who knows? We won't know until we talk next time. So with that, guys, Jedi, Sith, Thrawn fanboys and fangirls, Porgs, and whatever you guys are in between, may the Force be with you always. We'll be right back.